This is Cry Justice with Judy Redlick, examining issues of importance to you, your family, and our community that the other media just won't cover. Now, here's Judy Redlick.
Assisted suicide, euthanasia, how quickly are they coming to pass in our nation and throughout the world? And what about this thing called cloning? Is some cloning okay? Let's discuss these pertinent issues with Dr. Wilkie. It's all next on today's edition of Cry Justice. I'm Judy Redlick. Please join me. Dr. Wilkie practiced medicine in Cincinnati for 40 years. He was on the senior attending staff of the Providence and Good Samaritans Hospitals. In 1983, he co-founded International Right to Life Federation and remains its president today. And he served as the U.S. National Right to Life Committee from 1980 to 1991 and now is president of Life Issues Institute. Dr. Wilkie, by the way, and his wife have authored 10 books. He's a well-renowned lecturer, has gone to 66 countries with his message. He's been published in 28 languages. Let's welcome him to this edition of Cry Justice. Dr. Wilkie, as we think about cloning and some of the new bioethic things that have been happening, what comments do you have concerning them? Do you think it's good? Do you think it's bad? What do you think?
Well, cloning is, of course, creating new life. And to us, it is crystal clear. If you conceive in the natural method, you have a single-celled living human being. And that human contains everything that you and I are today. At that first cell stage, we were alive. We weren't dead. We were human, 46 human chromosomes. We were either male or female, X and Y chromosomes.
Right.
And we were very complete because nothing was added to that cell between then and now except nutrition and oxygen. Now, if we talk about soul, we have opinions. We have no hard revealed facts there. But nevertheless, it certainly seems logical to me that Almighty God creates that immortal soul at the first beginning cell because nothing changes from there on in. Now, what is a clone? Well, a clone does this artificially. Instead of a male and female joining together, we artificially take a nucleus from another cell and put it in an ovum. And then, presumably, this little tiny new human begins to grow. Well, we know that there are all kinds of problems here. Dolly the sheep, what was it, something like 300 or 400 lambs did not make it until she finally did. And of course, she is a living sheep right now and has had some lambs, but she's prematurely aging. She's got arthritis. And we know that clones of other mammals, mammal is what we are, where we conceive our offspring inside of the female who carries to term and delivers and suckles at her breast. That makes us mammals. So a lot of animals are mammals, dogs and squirrels and sheep and so forth. But so we have had cloning of many mammals, but we also know that they don't come out normal. Many of them die en route, and we have deformities that are really very severe. But with animals, you kill the bad ones. You're going to do that with human babies?
You think of the newest ones that have been cloned recently. Some of them have been brought to America. Some have been kept secret.
Do we really know that we have had human clones? They've claimed, but there's no baby out here who's been examined by you know, for DNA and that kind of stuff.
Really? None of those clones have been examined for DNA?
Nothing has been proven. Claims
Amazing.
Only.
Amazing.
So, we don't know. We do know from scientists who keep telling us that the cloned mammals, none of them are entirely normal.
Mm.
And none of the human babies will be entirely normal. So what have the politicians done? They've said, well, we want to make these human clones because we want to experiment on them and then kill them. So therefore, we've decided we're going to say that there's two kinds of cloning. It's completely arbitrary. They made this up. But they said there is reproductive cloning. Now, that's a human clone, a living human baby, who then is put in a mother's womb and carried to term. Okay, they call that reproductive cloning. Then they've coined another phrase, which is a complete lie. It is therapeutic cloning. Well, President Bush didn't buy that. He calls this research cloning, and that's what it is. And we go a little further, and we say this one is clone and kill. Because they, if they could, would create a human being by the cloning technique, then experiment on this little boy or girl, and then at about 2 or 3 weeks of age, kill him. And now that's what they call therapeutic cloning. Now the word therapy means to cure, to help. But this is the exact opposite. It's killing. So the word therapeutic cloning is a lie. We should call it research cloning if we want to be very polite. But if we want to be very accurate, we should call it clone and kill. We think there's no question about what the law should say here. Flat out prohibition of all human cloning. No exceptions.
Now, when you think about how much money is going to be allocated for, quote, scientific research, which includes cloning, how can our government sanction that? How can our president even start to sanction it?
All the government, federal government, can do is say, we will not use federal money for human cloning. They really can't reach into the laboratory and say, you can't clone. At least, I don't think they can. They're going to try and do it. But, yes, there is potentially a great deal of money made here from human clone farms, embryo farms. And it's got a lot of potential. It may cure a lot of diseases.
Mm-hmm.
But I emphasize may because, again, there's nothing proven there.
Now, let's talk a little bit about stem cell research. What do you think about that? There are a couple of different types of stem cell research. And which one, or do you think any of them, are ethical?
Stem cells are progenitor, or the precursor, the preliminary cells in the body. Now, we have stem cells all through our bodies as adults. We have a great many stem cells in our bone marrow. And that's because we continue to have to make new blood.
Mm-hmm.
The average red blood cell lives only about 3 months and then is destroyed. So there's a continuous manufacturing process going on. And because of this, our bone marrows have a great many stem cells. The richest form, place to find stem cells is in the umbilical cord of the newborn baby. It's extremely rich with embryonic stem cells, which are the very, very basic cells out of which other organs and everything are produced. Now, we talk about embryonic stem cells and adult stem cells. Let's have a new conception. Now a single cell, which then begins to divide, divide, and divide as he or she travels up the mother's tube. When he or she is 1 week old, they plant within the nutrient lining of her womb. Well, halfway up that first week's journey, if we stop and look, we find that the single cell has turned into what looks a lot like a raspberry, a mulberry. It's a ball of cells.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a cystic ball. The center is basically fluid. And growing in the middle of that is a small group of cells, which we call embryonic stem cells, and which will then turn into most of the organs of the body.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you stop that process and take this four-day-old living human and cut him open, in the meaning you're killing him, then take those cells from the very center, which are embryonic stem cells, then you experiment with those. Or you try and make them multiply and grow more of their own. You try and transplant them into, let's say, a severed spinal cord or some attempt of that sort. We are told that these embryonic stem cells can cure everything from dandruff to flat feet. There has been nothing proven yet. Nothing.
And look how much money has been spent on stem cell research.
Oh, a great deal of money. But let's look at the other cells now. Adult stem cells, the kind in the umbilical cord and so forth. These have been used for years. There are hundreds of cases of cures of diabetes, using them to rebuild heart muscle from heart attacks. There are just a dozen ways that these adult stem cells have been used to help to cure diseases. And so what you've got then are two types. The adult types are very useful, and they have the advantage that you take your own cells, grow them, and put them back in your own body. Well, your body is not going to reject those because they are of your own body.
Right.
Problem with the embryonic stem cells is that this is some other person. Tiny, tiny, tiny person who was killed. And those cells are now used to try and help you. But it's like putting a kidney transplant in. Your body may well reject that.
Because of the there's no match.
It's not a good match, right. So, that's one of the major objections. The other is that an embryonic stem cell can cause infection. If the source of that, let's say that woman, had AIDS, then that infection carries through. Now you use those cells to attempt to cure, let's say, diabetes or something like that.
Oh, and the new person gets the infection.
And you infect the new person with that virus. And there is no way, none, to tell whether an infection like that is present.
Really?
No. So, and the other thing is, these cells so far, let me repeat, have not been proven to cure anything. It's all theory. It's all hope, conjecture. And legitimate conjecture, but the point is they have not proven to cure anything yet, whereas adult stem cells have a long history, if you please, of curing things. I think there's another interesting approach here. Venture capital. Now, this is a company or a wealthy person who has money, and they want to invest it in a project that will make more money for them.
Right.
These people are not dumb. They wouldn't have the money in the first place. So venture capital then is used. Somebody comes with an idea, a new gadget, and he said, this is really going to sell. And they say, I like it. I'll give you some money. And then I'll have partly control of your new little company, so forth. Okay. Venture capital is used in biologic research. There's money there to be made. Okay. What about stem cells. Yes, there has been money put into research for stem cells from private sources. But guess what? Out of about, let's take 15, which is the report from the Wall Street Journal, companies that have gotten venture capital to investigate stem cells, 14 of them are investigating adult stem cells and only one for embryonic stem cells.
Well, that tells you something, doesn't it?
Well, I think it's very clear. The smart boys aren't putting their money in embryonic stem cells because they don't think there's much future in its curative possibilities. But that explains why the biologic scientific community is working so hard to get government money, because they can't get private money. And so this is why they're trying to pass laws to have the government fund embryonic stem cell research, because nobody else will. So the picture overall, then, if you please, is that I don't think, from what we know now, that there's a whole lot of future for embryonic stem cells, which pleases us no end because it's simply immoral. And the only way you can get these is by killing little kids who are only 4 days old. Whereas adult stem cells are completely ethical. They don't carry any rejection potential. They don't carry any infection because you're putting my cells right back in me again.
Right.
And I think that's where the future lies. And I'm smiling.
I'm Judy Redlick. We'll be right back with more of Dr. Wilkie right after this message. This program has been produced and is supported by the Here's Help Radio Network. If you've enjoyed this program and would like to send a tax-deductible gift to keep it on this radio station, please send it to the Here's Help Radio Network, P.O. Box 473, St. Louis, Missouri, 63166. Do it today, and why not write a little note giving us your comments about this program? Well, Dr. Wilkie, as an MD, you took the Hippocratic Oath when you graduated from medical school.
I still did. They don't now anymore.
And that's true. They don't now anymore. What does it tell you about the physician today versus the physician 40 years ago when you graduated from med school?
Try 55 on...
55 years ago you graduated from med school?
Yes.
Amazing.
I'm pretty old. Yes, I'm class president, and I'm now trying to get my classmates together for our 55th med school class reunion.
Wow.
But in any case, medicine has changed. The academics who teach us, and sad to say, a lot of doctors in practice who used to take that oath don't anymore. Now, it said two striking things that we find. One of them was, it said, I will not do an abortion. And the other one said, I will not give a deadly drug to a patient. And it formed an ethic, and this was given to us by a pagan physician centuries before the time of Christ. But because the ethic was so pure and direct, that oath passed into the Christian era and was taken by Christian physicians for 2,000 years. But now they want to kill...
And non-Christian physicians for 2,000 years.
But now comes abortion. And so the first thing they did was drop that sentence out of the oath. And now comes euthanasia, and they dropped that paragraph out of the oath. And then I guess they got honest, and they said, well, why take the oath? So they quit taking it.
So where do we stand now on euthanasia? You just wrote a new book called Assisted Suicide.
Yes, Assisted Suicide, Euthanasia, Past and Present. First of all, we talk about the Nazi euthanasia program. There's a couple of chapters on that with some pretty gory details of how that was different than the Holocaust. The Nazi euthanasia program killed pure-blood Aryan Germans because they were defective. These were people in insane asylums. These were people with chronic diseases, people who had, say, multiple sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease or things of this sort, and little children, children born with various congenital problems, who were, as Hitler called, useless eaters. And before he opened, and after he opened the concentration camps, doctors in Hitler's Germany killed almost 300,000 pure-blood German citizens because they were useless eaters. Well,
wow.
That's the first several chapters of my book. Then I examine the Dutch situation today. I have an office in Holland. I am intimately aware of what goes on over there. I speak to pro-life doctors who don't kill patients, but they work with other doctors who do. Then I look at what's been happening in the United States, and the one victory that we did have that very little publicity was given to, we had an attempt by the pro-euthanasia people that went all the way to the Supreme Court, that if the case had gone against us, that would have legalized euthanasia throughout the United States. As a matter of fact, we won that case hands down, and the Supreme Court said, there is no right to euthanasia or assisted suicide in the United States Constitution. And that was a 9-0 vote, so it was a very positive opinion. However, the Supreme Court said a state may legalize assisted suicide. And so Oregon went ahead and did that. But since that time, we've had several states who've had referenda. And in each case, we have won those referendas. We've had several major judicial opinions that could have, again, given us legal euthanasia, and they've all gone pro-life. So we seem to be holding the line on that. And my book, I think, is probably the most up-to-date one. Of course, go through all the reasons that they give why we should have euthanasia, and I hope give good answers to refute them. And finally, my last chapter is the answer, and that is compassionate care of those who are dying or who have hopeless illnesses. Pain control, hospice, loving care, bringing relatives and so forth to see them, patching up old intra-family misunderstandings that people carry through their life oftentimes, the other half of a divorce who can come to his bedside and say that she is sorry if she's hurt him, and that she still loves him a bit, give him some peace of soul as he dies, and she can walk away the same. That's a very important thing for a person.
That is a very important thing.
Yeah. So that's that book, and I think it's maybe helping a lot of people. We keep trying.
And you have your one-minute radio programs that are new, Life's Jewels. And Life's Issues, of course, has been on the five-minute radio program that runs on how many stations now worldwide?
Life Issues is only in English. It's on around 300 stations. I'm pushing 5,000 programs now, over 18 years. The Jewels, though, has really sort of exploded. It's a one-minute commentary every day. It's on over 1,000 stations in the U.S., including about 100 Spanish. We're on about 400 Spanish stations in South America.
That's wonderful.
And we've just come out with the first volume of Portuguese, Brazilian
Portuguese.
And I think we're going to be starting on around 300 stations there.
Dr. Wilkie, how do you find time to do those radio shows and to write your books and to spend time with your lovely wife?
Well,
and all your grandchildren and children?
I tell people I've retired twice. I like the idea. She says, yeah, you're down to a 60-hour week.
You put together questions and answers, and you've just put out a new revision of that. Maybe you could briefly, in a minute or so, talk about that.
Well, the first edition was Handbook on Abortion, 2 years before Roe versus Wade, when abortion was made legal. It had an explosive beginning, went into a million copies in 10 different languages around the world. 10 years after it was published, we rewrote a much larger book, the same idea, a question and answer format, and it was called Abortion Questions and Answers. It went into 10 more languages, again, around the world. And then in the middle 90s, we wrote again, and that one we called Love Them Both. That's 10 years ago now almost, and we have now come out with the fourth generation using the older names. This one is Abortion Questions and Answers, Love Them Both. Over 1,000 questions and answers arranged in a totally usable fashion. There'll be, on one page, there'll be a question, a brief answer, and then underneath the citation, New England Journal of Medicine, date, so forth and so forth, so that anyone who uses this and is in, say, a debate or your schoolwork or what have you, can say, oh yes, this is so, and here's why. It was in this medical journal. So, it's been called the Bible of the Movement. We've kept its price very cheap for 400 and some pages, colored plates. It's only a $7 book.
Wow.
And on the market, it could sell for two or three times that. But we have a nonprofit publisher who doesn't advertise. And so we hope people buy it in bulk and give them away. And so anyway, that's the story.
And how can people get all of your materials?
Well, something that everybody has is a telephone, still do, and our phone number is 513-729-3600.
That's 1-513-729-3600.
3600. Now, if you're into email, fairly simple. It's info@lifeissues.org.
That's info@lifeissues.org.
info@lifeissues.org.
Dr. Wilkie, making a difference in our world. Life is important. How much do you value your life, and how much are you willing to fight for the rights that you have to live? I'm Judy Redlich. This is Cry Justice. Dr. Wilkie, thank you much
for taking some
of your time from me today. I'm Judy Redlich. Thanks a lot for coming along for this edition of Cry Justice. I really appreciate you bringing us into your home, your car, or your workplace. Hope you'll encourage a friend to tune to Cry Justice, too. It's on every day at the same time on this station. And if you'd like a list of the other stations Cry Justice airs on, please email me at knlc24judy@hearshelpnet.org. That's knlc24judy@hearshelpnet.org.